Hare Krishna. So reading from Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first division, second chapter, Sadhana Bhakti. Yesterday we concluded our discussion about the 64 limbs of devotion. And now Rupa Goswami is summarizing this discussion by saying, this is text 93, Anganam Pancha Kasyasya Puravam Vilikitasya Cha Nikila Shrait Yavodhaya Punarap Yatra Kirtanam. He says here, translation, though the last five limbs of bhakti, chanting the holy name and serving the deity with faith, relishing Bhagavatam in association with devotees, and associating with like-minded, affectionate devotees and living in Mathura, these five limbs of devotion, they were also mentioned in a previously when he was discussing, yet they've been restated here to establish their greater importance. So on these 64 limbs of devotion, we may have forgotten, but before we've already read about chanting the holy name, serving the deity, and associating with devotees and Bhagavatam. And now again they're being repeated at the end of the list because he wants to emphasize the extreme importance of these limbs of devotion. And we discussed something about that. This is text 94. Itikaya Shikanta Karanamu Vasana. Thus are stated the forms of upasana or worship and services by the body, senses, and the whole of the mental quantum. So this is, we have upasana. Upasana, the method of worship, how to move closer to the desired object. So these 64 limbs of devotion are what is called bhakti upasana. This is the process of worship. And these 64 limbs of devotion, which are outlined or mentioned here by Srila Rupa Goswami, they engage all of our body. Our mind is engaged. Our speaking faculty is engaged. And our senses, our hands, our working senses are also engaged in favorable acts and positive acts of devotion, which are called bhakti yanga. 95. Chatu shashti pritak sangha atika bedat kramadina. All these 64 forms show different distinctive features of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, both separately, such as submission to Guru, and collectively, worship in the temple. So he's just saying here that these 64 limbs of devotion, some of them are done independently, and some of them are done in mass. Some of these limbs of devotion we perform with others. We perform Sankirtan with others. We hear the Srimad Bhagavatam in association with others. But surrendering to Guru, that's our own. That's solo. That's independent. Whether someone else surrenders or not, that's our independent choice or independent action. Probably used to say, the Guru will train the disciple to some extent, or maybe fully, or try his best. And then the disciple has to fly his own plane. Like when flying a plane, ultimately you have to sit there in the cockpit as a pilot, and you have to taxi off the runway and ascend to the sky and then land the plane again if you want to be a proper pilot. No one else can fly your plane. You have to fly. So we have to do our own sadhana, although guided and directed and blessed by Guru, but ultimately the burden of proof is on us. The Guru can't chant our rounds. The Guru can't do our smarana. The Guru can't do our bhajan or puja. He can guide us, but we have to do our work. This is our upasana. Oh, he's mentioning that. And then, this translation is the same. And then this is text 96. He says, Atar sanu matenaisam udaharanam iryate. Now examples of all these forms of upasana will be cited from the words of the rishis and saints. So he's going to give examples of these different forms of sadhana. He just listed them, basically what we've heard over a couple of days with some brief explanation by ourselves. There's a list of the 64 limbs of devotion. And now he's going to repeat them by citing some examples from the Shastra to give us a more clear idea or pragmatic expression or practical expression of this idea. So this is text 97. So this is, now here we go again, we're repeating. He gave us a list of 64, now again we're going to hear the list of 64, but with some examples. So anything good is worth repeating. If we eat a rasgulla and we like it, and we might think, oh, maybe someday I'll get another rasgulla. So these 64 limbs of devotion are being repeated again, so we can further deeply understand them. So here we go. This is text 97. It's describing Sri Guru Parashraya. And it quotes a verse from 11th canto, chapter 3, verse 21, which is a verse emphasizing the need to surrender to Guru. So here it says, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta Jigyashu Shrey Uttamam Shabde Pure Chad Nishnatam Brahman Yupasham Ashrayam. Taking shelter of the lotus feet of Guru. Therefore, this is 11.3.21 Bhagavatam. Any person who seriously desires real happiness must seek a spiritual master who is conversant with the bhakti scriptures, accomplished in hearing and chanting about the Lord and fully tranquil. So he's saying that if you want happiness, you must seek a guru. And then he says that he's shabda. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignashu shreta uttamam. Shabde parecha nishnatam. Nishta. He's nishta. So this shabda brahmani nishnata. Vishnu says, what does this term mean, shabda brahman? Means the verse is saying that the spiritual preceptor, he should be absorbed in the Godhead, in the absolute Godhead, Parabrahman. And he should be free from all attraction and aversion. In other words, he's not influenced by the pushings and pullings of this material world. He's fixed, nishta, fixed in the spiritual platform. So when it says this, Shabda Brahmani Nishnata, he says this means one who has mastered, Vishnath is telling, this means one, a guru is one who has mastered all the sacred books on bhakti and all authentic scriptures. And Para Brahmani Nishnata means one who is completely engaged in chanting the name of the Lord, singing his praise and glories and other pastimes of the Lord. Sometimes this is described that the guru is engaged in Nam Kirtan, Guna Kirtan, Lila Kirtan. He's always describing the qualities of the Lord, either by writing, some gurus are always writing books about the Lord and glorifying the Lord. So this is Guna Kirtan, Lila Kirtan. They describe so many Lilas in their books. There's very high absorption in this Parabrahmani Nishnata. Supreme Brahman, because the Supreme Brahman is the personality of Godhead. So this verse from 11th canto about taking shelter of Guru, Tasmat Gurum Prapadyeta, it's also telling the same thing. Yes, Guru Parashraya. This is the first limb of bhakti. And 11th canto, Krishna is telling this to Uddha. Tasmat Gurum Prapadyeta. Prapadyeta. One should surrender to Guru. And then who is Guru? And Guru is Shreya Uttam, of the Shreyas and Prayas. We say Shreshta, Shreshta Jana. Shreshta Jana means the very topmost qualified person who is always absorbed in the ultimate benefit. He's always absorbed in the ultimate benefit of himself and trying to give the ultimate benefit to others. It's called a Shreshta. Dvija Shreshta. Dvija Shreshta. Dvija means twice born, a Brahmin. So Shreshta means the best of the Brahmins, because he's absorbed in the ultimate benefit, which is the spiritual benefit of himself and others, by doing bhakti bhajan and teaching bhakti bhajan to others. So this is Shreya Uttam. This is such a guru should be this type of person, the topmost of all beneficial personalities, because he's trying to engage, or he is engaged, in the worship of Radha and Krishna Vrindavan, and he's trying to teach others the same. So this is one quality. Then Shabda Pare Janishnatam. He's absorbed in the Bhakti Shastras, and he's also fixed in the service of Krishna, the personality of Godhead. So these are the characteristics of the proper preceptor to take shelter of. So this is the first limb of devotion, Guru Pada Shraya, the first one of the 64 limbs. Now Rupa Goswami is repeating all 64 again with different examples from Shastra, different verses. And of course, this is a very famous verse. Someone says, oh, who is a guru? How do I don't know who to choose as a guru. What are the qualifications? What are the characteristics? Well, this is one very important verse that is always quoted whenever someone is trying to understand the definition of guru. They will quote this verse, 11.3.21. Now, the next limb of devotion, second limb is Sri Krishna Adi Diksha Shikshanam. So this is the second limb. Diksha Adi Shikshanam. So one should take Diksha and the Krishna mantra from the Guru, then receive instructions from him. And then there's a verse from the 11th canto, same chapter 3, next verse 22. Tatra Bhagavatam Dharman Sikshed. Siksheda Guru Vatmadaivataha Amayayanu Vritya Yaistush Ye Dat Manat Atmadohari. One should receive from the Guru initiation into Krishna mantra and special lessons in Krishna bhakti. The preceptor, this is Sri Prabhuda addressing Nimi Maharaj. This is not Uddhava Gita. The spiritual master should be served with all sincerity in the full consciousness, in the full consciousness that the Guru is one's very self, and he should be revered as a God in person. So considering one's spiritual master as such, one should receive instructions from him regarding the spiritual doctrines of the Bhagavatam. Such instructions received from a revered guru please the Lord, who is ever ready to give himself up to the finite individual. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti comments, regarding one's guru as one's very self, what does this mean? It means as dear as one's self. Well, that's quite obvious. So then, so this is, in other words, our very self. There's nothing more dear. We may lose parts of our body here and there due to infirmity or disease, and we can spare an arm or a leg or a finger or two, and we can't spare our very self. Self is the final. They say self-preservation is the first law of nature. So this is the most dear thing to us, is ourself. So we should feel that the guru is the most dear thing, is as dear as our very self. That Sri Guru is more dear to me than my own body. In other words, we can part with our body, but we can't part with our soul, or otherwise we're finished. So we can part with so many people in this world. We can part company, as they say. We can divest our interest in different people or different places, but we can never part company with the Guru. We say that this Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya, the seva of the Bhagavat, is eternal. That means the Bhagavatam and the book Bhagavata. So Guru's relationship with Guru is eternal. So there's no question of parting company. You'll give up the body, but you won't give up Guru. And take another body, but then Guru will come again. Because Guru's relationship is not with the temporary body. Guru's relationship is with the eternal soul. The soul is changing bodies. Dehino shvanyata dehi. Homaram yavanam jara tata dehantara praptir dhiras tata namuyati. The body is changing, the soul is changing bodies one after another. But we're not changing Guru one after another. Of course, people do that also. Take one, and then another one, another one, another one. Actually, we don't take Guru. Guru is sent to us. Guru takes us. Guru takes us out of this world. So this is the... Guru is called Atma because in this verse... I didn't mention the verse. I should mention the verse. So this is the principle, Sri Krishna Dikshadi Shikshanam. Then the verse is there from 11th canto. Tatra Bhagavatam Dharmam Sikshed Guravatma Daivata Amaya Yanu Rityas Yas Tushyad Atmata Dohari. So these commentaries, which I read before the verse actually, says Guru Atma Daivata. Guru is my Atma. My Atma is Guru. So this is what I was saying, that one should... Atma means the self, the soul, the heart of the matter. So we should accept the Guru as our very Atma. Accepting the bona fide spiritual master as one's life and soul and worshipful deity, Daivata, the disciple should learn from him the process of pure bhakti by sincere service. By that pure bhakti, the Lord, the Supreme Soul, will be satisfied and give himself to the devotee. So the Guru, Vishnu says, the Guru is called Atma. Sikshen Guruvatma Daivata. Because he is as dear as the self is. So this is a very high conception of the spiritual master. Most disciples don't really have this realization and don't really act on this principle. Well, this is the example that Rupa Goswami is citing for us to learn or strive to attain this state of dedication, this state of realization, understanding that I've taken Diksha, Sri Krishna Diksha Adi Shikshanam. I take Diksha, a Krishna mantra from Guru, a Guru. And I've received instructions from him. Now, this is the verse that Rupa Goswami is choosing to explain what that means. Implication of this second principle of bhakti to take Diksha and Shiksha from Guru. Well, this is the implication. That Guru is just, he's not just another teacher. I've had so many teachers. Even nowadays they use this term Guru quite loosely. I have my guitar Guru, my tennis Guru, my guitar Guru, my cooking Guru, my dance Guru. It's very common in the West, they say like this. A Guru is meant to be the agent of God, the messenger of transcendence, the teacher of metaphysical knowledge. This is Guru, something heavy, something extraordinary, something otherworldly. So therefore, Nimi is telling Prabhuda in the Bhagavatam that the disciple should accept the Guru as Atma. So this teacher, the Guru, is a spiritual master, spiritual teacher. So we have so many professors and high school teachers, they teach us so many subjects. And we're with them for some time, then we leave them. A Guru, as I mentioned, we never leave Guru. We may leave Guru, but Guru never leaves us. Guru is always with us because Guru is Krishna. Krishna is the Adi Guru, Chaitya Guru in the heart. The Super Soul is always accompanying the Atma, so the Guru is always with the Atma. So the Guru Atma Daivata, Atma Guru Daivata, that the Guru is should be considered and understood factually that he's like my Atma. He is my the guiding light of my life. He is as dear to me, Guru is as dear to me and near to me and valuable to me as my very self. Myself is most dear, and the Guru is that self. So therefore the Guru is most dear to me, as dear as myself. This is what Rupa Goswami is trying to impress upon us, to develop this outlook. Now that was the second and third principles, or excuse me, third principle of devotion. It's this Vishrambena Gurur Seva, to serve the Guru with reverence and zest and delight. Service of the Guru with real zest and delight. That means there's intimacy, there's joy, there's happiness, and there's also reverence. And this word Vishramba, Vishrambena Gurur Seva. This is the third principle. And then, to illustrate this point, Rupa Goswami cites a verse from the 11th canto, chapter 17, where Uddhava is addressing Krishna. Famous verse. Acharyam, acharyam mam vijaniyan navamanyeta karhichit namartyu yasuyeta sarvadeva mayaguru Namartya Buddhya Suyeta Sarvadeva Mayaguru. A very famous verse, especially Acharya Mamvijaniyan. So many times, Prabhupada quote this verse, Acharya Mamvijaniyan. Vijaniyan. Visheshjan. You should know very exactly, very particularly, very especially you should understand, the Guru is me. The Acharya is me. I know one famous Indian, North Indian guru with thousands of followers. Before he would start his lectures every day at sunrise, there would be so much kirtan going on in his temple or his ashram. Then at sunrise the microphone would switch over to him and he would give lecture. And the first thing that would come over the microphone was this very elderly sadhu, a guru, very deep voice. And he would say every day the same thing, Acharya Mam Vijaniyan, with lots of reverb on the mic, on the speaker. Acharya, 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 Mam, 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 Vijaniyan, Vijaniyan. And then he would go on to give his talk. Everyone, all my shishya should understand that the Acharya is me, that I am God. I am God. Krishna is saying, the Acharya is me, and me, mom means God. Krishna is speaking, Arjuna, the Acharya is God. And this is the idea that he wanted his disciples to understand. But we, the Gaudiya Vaishnava viewpoint of this Bhagavatam verse, and the intention of Krishna when he spoke to Uddhava, is the Acharya is my representative. Like the ambassador should be respected, just like the prime minister. The whole country is being... The whole country is being represented in a foreign country by the ambassador. So the whole country stands behind him. All the armies, all the legislatures, all the political people are standing behind the ambassador. If you offend the ambassador, you might have a war on your hands. If the ambassador to America is somehow insulted in Delhi and he's very close to the president, there may be a war. So the Guru is the ambassador of God. He's a very important minister in the spiritual government of the Lord. So he should be honored like this. So realizing the position and identity of Guru, then the response to that is Vishrambena Gurur Seva. That Guru, who is Acharya Mam, who is me or Krishna, understanding the significance of his position or the unique speciality of his position and his significance and prominence that he is God's ambassador, then it behooves me to serve him with, as it says here, real zest and delight. Or as it also says, with it says here, with reverence, which isn't quite the full meaning of the word Vishrambhena. And Vishnath gives his purport. This is 11.17.27. One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy the Guru, thinking the Guru an ordinary man, for he is a representative of all the demigods. Sarvadeva Maya Guru. This is another translation from old style English. Knowest, Krishna told Uddhava, addressed Uddhava, knowest thou the Acharya, or Guru, as myself? Never thinkest thou of him as any other or common mortal. Never must thou show disrespect to him. Never must thou find fault with him in the mistake due to the mistaken belief that he is a common human being. For the Guru is the embodiment of all the gods in himself. There was all the gods are within the Guru. And I heard some nice explanation of that once, and I can't recall all of it, because it was quite interesting. Because we say, Sarva Deva Maya Guru. In the Guru are all the devas. So now one Acharya gave a purport where he explained this meaning. Because all the gurus are in the, all the devas are in the Guru. So each of those devas has a delegated area of responsibility and a delegated action in the universe. So we know that Brahma, he's a deva, he creates, Shiva destroys, and Vishnu maintains, and Varuna provides water and or taste in water, and Vayu provides air, and Indra provides rain, and Surya provides sun. They do these different departments. So he was explaining that how the functions of all the devas are. Demigods are functioning through the Guru. For example, the Guru is Brahma. Brahma is in the Guru because the Guru creates. It's called Diksha. It means he's second birth. Dvija. He creates bhakti by giving a seed. Just like the father puts a seed in his seed in the mother. Or the husband puts a seed in the wife and produces a child. He creates a child. So the Guru puts the seed of bhakti in the heart. Ramanda Brahma Dekon, Bhagavan Jiva, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai, Bhakti Lata Vish. The seed of service, the desire to serve, the inspiration and understanding to serve is placed in the heart. So that's a creation. He creates the desire to serve Krishna, awakens and creates the desire to serve Krishna. So there he's functioning as Brahma, the creator principle. He's creating universe. He's creating a new universe for the conditioned soul, creating a new life, creating a new line of action. Spiritual life, service to the Lord, spiritual world, spiritual activity. So this is the Brahma function. Now, another demigod is Vishnu. Of course, he's God also, but considered one of the... He's the maintainer. Creator is Brahma, the maintainer is Vishnu. Shirdakshai, Garvadakshai, etc. So the Guru is also acting as Vishnu because he's maintaining. He's protecting the devotee with his instructions. With his instructions, he's nourishing him. Because maintenance also means nourishment. The mother is maintaining the child. How does she maintain the child? By nourishing. So Vishnu is also maintaining the world by nourishing the world. Another name for Vishnu is Vishwambara. Vishwambara means he who nourishes the universe. He who maintains and nourishes and satisfies and feeds the universe. So Vishnu is providing arrangements for us to eat. And he's maintaining us by giving us water, light, heat, food, etc. So the Guru is also acting as Vishnu, the demigod Vishnu, because he's maintaining the disciple. How does he maintain the disciple? By his Guru Vani, Guru Agya, by giving him orders to engage him in Krishna's service and giving him instructions to stay fixed on the spiritual path and not fall again into the abyss of ignorance or illusion, Maya. And of course, in a practical way, in the Gurukul, the Guru is feeding the disciple. He's giving him roti, sabji, etc. His very life energy is coming from the Guru. His Dehapran, the life of his body is coming from the Guru Prasad, the rice dal chapati. And the Atma Pran, The life of his soul is also coming from Guru Prasad in the form of Guru Vani, the instructions of the Guru. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Gori Aikya Sri Guru Charane Rati Ese Uttamagati. So being attached to the Guru, one attains perfection and everything is accomplished. And now, another famous demigod is Shiva. Shiva functions to destroy. He's a destroyer. He destroys everything at the time of universal cataclysm. So, Guru also acts as Shiva. Because Shiva is also within the Guru. So the Guru acts as Shiva. How does he do that? By stomping down all our material desires. The Guru destroys. He destroys our material life. He destroys our material attachments by his kripa, by his mercy, by his glance, by his touch, by his instructions, by his guidance, by his shelter. He destroys our material attachments, our illusions. He destroys our illusions. Replaces darkness with light, ignorance with knowledge, foolishness with sanity, hatred with love. Like this. So then, and it goes on, it was quite a lengthy thing. Surya provides light. Surya provides light to the world, the sun god. So Surya is also within the Guru. The Guru also acts as Surya because he gives light in our life. Krishna, Surya Sama, Maya Haya Andhakara. Krishna, when Krishna comes in our life and Guru brings Krishna into our life, Krishna, Surya Sama, Maya Haya Andhakara. Guru brings Krishna into our life, so that means he brings light, the light of knowledge. The light of knowledge is brought into the life, into the heart, into the mind of the disciple by the mercy of Sri Guru. So Guru acts as Suryadev, the sun god. And the moon, what does the moon do? The moon rises at night, the full moon, with its very soothing and cooling and refreshing rays, and it nourishes the plants. All of the plants, fruit trees and vegetables and plants, they develop their ras, their juice, the juice. Krishna says in Gita, I become the moon and thereby supply the juice, the taste to all the vegetables. So the moon rays are very important to get taste in the fruits and vegetables, and they're very soothing. So the Guru, the moon god, the moon planet, or the moon is also in the Guru, because by the Guru's instructions, the disciple's mind becomes pacified, it becomes cool. The disciple's mind becomes cool and fresh and pacified by the moon-like instructions emanating from the mouth of the Guru. Guru Chandramukh. Guru Chandramukh. The moon-like mouth of the Guru. And not only that, the instructions of the Guru, they act to help the Bhakti Lata grow. Bhakti Lata is also a plant, the creeper of devotion. Like other plants and fruit trees and sabji plants, they grow by the moon rays and they get nice taste. So when one bathes, when one continually bathes, the plant of his devotional creeper or his bhakti lata is continually bathed by the ambrosial rays of the Guru's nectarine comforting instructions, then his bhakti lata grows very luxuriantly and very healthily and very steadily and produces very succulent and tasty and delicious fruits of prema, Krishna prema. So therefore, Sarvadeva Maya Guru, the Guru is also representing the moon planet. And it goes on like this. There's 33 million demigods, and it might take a while to describe all these planets. Deva, Sarvadeva Maya Guru. So the Guru is the sum total. All the demigods, all their powers, all the powers of their planets are all within the Guru. So he's not an ordinary man. He's an extraordinary personality. A representative, an ambassador of God. So one should Sakshat Hari, he is one with the interest of the Lord, he is not different from the Lord's interest. So we should always behave accordingly. So this verse is used by Rupa Goswami to illustrate the necessity, realizing because this verse from 11th canto, Acharya Mamvijaniyam Navamanyate Karichit, is basically giving a definition of the Guru, understanding his supreme position. And once one has that understanding, then certain action is incumbent upon one to react in a particular way. Because knowledge creates responsibility, and responsibility is expressed through proper action. So therefore, when one has this knowledge of the identity of Guru, then he has a responsibility to act accordingly. And if he doesn't, then he's negligent and he's culpable. Because when you have knowledge and don't implement it, then you get punished more than if you're in ignorance and acting in ignorance. So therefore, Rupa Goswami is saying, this verse, the principle he's telling here is Vishram Bena Gurur Seva. This is the third limb of devotion, and he's using this verse from 11th canto to illustrate this third limb. Because when one understands this verse from 11th canto, then he'll say, oh, my guru is such a person, such a personality that Krishna himself, Sri Krishna, is glorifying the guru principle. He's glorifying the guru to Uddhav, and he's illuminating Uddhav with the clear conception of the guru, guru tattva. I have to see my guru in a new light. I have to understand the position of my guru in a different way. So now, responding to all this influx of higher knowledge, I have to be very dedicated and very determined to engage in Vishram Bena Gurur Seva, to serve my spiritual master with great reverence and respect and with real, as it says here, zest and delight. It means you happily serve your guru with great enthusiasm and a feeling of intimacy, a feeling of intimacy, friendship, with a sprinkle of respect. A very interesting combination. Not all respect and no intimacy, and not all intimacy and no respect. It's an interesting balance. And Krishna gives the insight how to maintain the balance. You get too close and you get burned. You get too far and you freeze to death. So Chanakapanda says, Niti Shastra, there are three entities we should not get too close to and not get remain too far from. One is fire, one is guru, and one is the king, the ruler. Don't get too close or you become burned. Don't get too far away or you perish. You'll be finished. So there's a fine balance, the midway point, which one will understand by his sincerity. Tesham satata yutanam bhajitam pritipurvakam dami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. Krishna is telling in Gita that one is engaged in very loving and dedicated devotion. I'm very happy with that. I'm very pleased with his attempt. His endeavors are very satisfactory to me. Because of my being pleased with his actions in devotion, then I will give him satisfactory knowledge. Dadami buddhi. Dadami buddhi. Dadami amida. I will give buddhi, intelligence, Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, by which he will be united with me, and he will not be separated from me. This is my promise to my sincere and loving and dedicated devotee. So the sincerity is the keynote to arrive at the proper mode of behavior in regard to this principle of service of the Guru. The fourth principle, or the fourth limb of the 64 limbs of devotion, and the accompanying verse which illustrates that is given here. This is the from Skanda Puran. The fourth principle is Sadhu Vartmanu Vartanam. Sadhu Vartmanu Vartanam. Treading in the path of the sadhus, or in this other book says following the scriptural rules, which is not very clear translation. It is sadhu vartman. Anu vartanam means to follow the path. In the Skanda Purana it is said, the best way to tread the path of the saintly persons which they have followed without, the best way to effortlessly follow the path of the previous sages and by which they attain the Lord Himself. Or rather, this is the best way. In other words, we don't have to start something new. We don't have to create a new path or a new idea or a new method. A new yoga. It's called, there's so many yogas always coming out all the time. This yoga, that yoga. You see, especially in India and overseas, everyone's coming up with swara yoga and all so many, every year is some new form of yoga. It's not necessary. Sadhu Vartmana Vartanam. Simply follow the established path, which is followed by the sadhus, and the path that the sadhus and saintly persons of the past have followed has been given in the revealed scriptures. There's no need to add anything new or create a new way. These paths are perfect, and the teachings are perfect. We need to simply adopt them in our own lives and thereby perfect our own lives. Skanda Purana, it is said, oh, he said that already. So it says, this is the path that is free from all kinds of ills of life and is the source of real success of the finite self, or the Atma. So this other translation says, one should follow the scriptural rules which give the highest benefit and are devoid of hardship, by which the previous devotees easily progressed. And then, of course, here doesn't have all the verses there. Samrigya Shreya Samhetu Pantat Santapa Varjita Anvatap Shramam Purve Yena Santa Pratastire. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We simply have to join the wheel. The existing wheel is there. Join it to an axle. Put a piece of board between the two axles and you have a car. Start going somewhere. So then, it's a kind of a natural sequence following this verse. There's another supporting verse, which is quite popular to prevent upstarts from creating some new line or new path. Then Rupa Goswami says, we should sadhu vartmana vartanam, follow the path of the previous sadhus, and the scripture, then he quotes this famous verse here. This is from Brahma Yamala. Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancha Ratra Vidim Vina Aikantiki Harir Bhakti Utpatyaiva Kalpate. The Brahma Yamala says that overzealous concern and practice of bhakti, which disregards the prescriptions, the scriptural injunctions of the Shruti, Smriti, and Puranas and Pancharatras, is simply a source of all kinds of trouble. So this is often a problem. People concoct something new without any basis in the Shrutis or Smritis. But Rupa Goswami is saying that everything must be supported and backed by the Vedic Praman, Shastra Praman. And this translation here of the Brahma Yamala says, Shruti Smriti Puranadi, he says, even if a person seems to have attained steadiness in bhakti and practicing pure bhakti to the Lord, that bhakti is a misfortune if it rejects the rules of Shruti Smriti and Purana and Pancharatra due to lack of faith in them. So Jiva Goswami says, this quotation shows the fault in not observing the rules of scripture. In other words, one should accept the Vaishnava scriptures, and one should accept only those things for which one is qualified, and not other things. So there's so many scriptures are unlimited and vast, and they're meant for all different levels of devotees and spiritual practitioners. So according to our level, we have to accept the appropriate teachings and follow accordingly. So of course, we should not disregard them. And whatever we do, it should be backed by the support of scripture. other words, everything, as I mentioned the other day, it's a path of dependence, declaring our dependence on God and dependence on the scriptures. Not that we use our power of logic or power of ration or reason and our intellectual acumen to try to carve out a new way of self-realization. How many smart people try to do that? It's called the eclectic path. They take a little bit from the Vedas, a little bit from Zen, a little bit from Buddhism, a little bit from TM, and they mix it all together and cook it on low heat. And after 15 minutes, they come up with a new dharma or a new system. And then they try to package it, hi-fi packaging, with some interesting terminology, and hit the advertising and collect a following. But generally, they make some initial, it's like a fad, it becomes a fad, and a few followers gather around, but it doesn't stand the test of time because there's no basis in realized or eternal Shastra, Shabda Brahman. It's just a fabrication of someone's mind. It's a mental concoction. It's a mentally produced path which is not actually sanctioned or ordained or inspired by the Lord directly, so that these paths don't last. They come and go like waves in the ocean. So remaining in one's proper sphere is a virtue, and the opposite is a source of evil. Thus, virtues and their opposites had to be construed in the above manner. When non-observance of the prescribed course is spoken of, what is meant is a repudiation and a skeptical attitude, and not non-observance out of indolence or ignorance. So what that means is, sometimes people, they can't follow the rules and regulations because they're sick or covered by ignorance or laziness. But that doesn't mean that they're disregarding them. They're just temporarily incapable of following them due to some effect of the modes, sickness or whatever. So that's permitted to some extent. But to act totally independent in a conscious, healthy way, to act independent of the Shruti, Smriti, and Puranas and Pancharatras, the Vidhi, Pancharatrika Vidhi, Puranic Vidhi, Vina. This is Hari Bhakti Utpatayava. This is upheaval. This turns bhakti upside down. This uproots bhakti, distorts bhakti, corrupts bhakti, destroys bhakti, hari bhakti. So therefore it's a disturbance. Sometimes people do like that. They dress as devotees and they look like Vaishnavas, but they engage in all kinds of abominable activities. So then the general mass of people say, what is this? These people are dressed as Vaishnavas. They're engaged in they're doing Hari Kirtan, Sankirtan, but then they're breaking all kinds of breaking all the principles and acting in a abominable way. So their behavior is not sanctioned because the scriptures say that one should live in a pure way. The Vaishnavas also follow the principles of purity in their lives. Samodamastapa Shocham Shantir Arjum Evacha Gyanavigyanam Ashtakyam Brahma Karma Sabhavajam. These are the basic qualities of a Brahmin. And a Vaishnava is more than a Brahmin, so certainly he's clean and tolerant. Internally clean, externally clean, and tolerant, and he's faithful and follows the religious codes. These are Brahminical qualities, how they work. So the Vaishnava who may look like one but engaging in all wrong activities, then he degrades the path of devotion in the eyes of the non-devotees. So it becomes a disturbance in the society. And even 500 years ago, there were personalities in Vrindavan. There was one, Rupa Kaviraj. Rupa Kaviraj was a very great scholar and pundit. And he was preaching some different ideas that were his own viewpoints, which were not backed by scripture. But he's very intelligent, so he could speak very elaborate way. But the pundits of Vrindavan, the Gaudiya Vaishnava pundits, they challenged him, and then eventually they drove him out of town, so to speak. He was not able to sell his wares in Vrindavan because everybody became wary of him. And then he went to Assam and he became famous there because, I think it was Assam, people aren't very discriminating there, and they weren't able to see through the cover of his sleight of hand philosophical presentation. But so sometimes people like this, they come, like Pondraka. Pondraka disguised himself as Krishna and even challenged Krishna to fight and said, Krishna, you're bogus, I'm the real Krishna. Because Pondrak had stuck two cardboard arms on his body in addition to his original arms. So then he manifested his Chaturbhuj Rup, forearm form, and said, I am Vishnu. I am the Supreme. So this verse, Shruti Shruti Pranadi, Pancharatrika Vidim Vida, Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpatyaiva Kalpate. This type of verse is a very powerful verse, and Rupa Goswami is using it, saying, yes, we should first, the fourth limb of devotion he's repeating here and giving elaboration, sadhuvartmana vartante. We should follow the paths of the sadhus, how they acted, how they chanted, how they did engage in bhajan, how they behaved, how they meditated, how they did bhakti upasana. We should live with them, we should study their lives and emulate their teachings and live according to their instructions. And then following that, directly says, now how do they live? Did they make up their own thing or do something new? Did Narottam, he came 180 years after Rupa, so he said, I'm in a new age now, it's a new generation. All of Rupa's ideas, they're antiquated, they're old-fashioned. Rupa's not hip. Rupa Goswami is not with it. So I have to start the new sampradaya, the new ideas, new conceptions. No, he didn't do that. He was what they call a traditionalist or a fundamentalist, presenting the fundamental principles that Rupa Goswami taught, which are the same principles you find in Pancharatrika literature, Narada Pancharatra, Sanat Kumara Samhita, and all these great books. So we simply have to, as we mentioned repeatedly, be anugatya, Rupa Anuga, Rupa Anugatya. To be Anugatya Rupa Goswami, follow his teachings, because he was following the previous predecessor acharyas. In this way, Sadhavartmana Vartate, following the path of the sadhus, and their path is upheld and supported and strengthened and defined by the instructions of Shruti Smriti Puranadi. And this is what Rupa Goswami is, this is how he's tying up these two points. Follow the path of the sadhus, and how do you know who the sadhu is? Because there are so many people who are saying, I'm a sadhu, I'm a saintly person, I'm guru, I'm acharya, follow my swara yoga path, follow my upasana yoga. So many things, many things come every year, some new thing comes. And we don't know where to find a basis in Shastra. They try to do a little hocus pocus and whammy dammy on the thing and make it look something special. And they themselves may have done some Purushcharan Vrata. The proponents of these new age type processes, they do some Purushcharan Vrata, and they have Darshan of Saraswati or Hanuman, and they beg for power to control people or to have expertise in speech. It's called Vagsiddhi. And that way they can bamboozle and mislead masses of people. And therefore people say, oh, it's very successful. Many people following. Yes, yes, it's very helpful. It helped me. This way they cheat so many people in the name of their newfound process of self-realization. The Rupa Goswami was a traditionalist, and he's preaching this tradition, Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, and the tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism is based on Shruti and Smriti, not based on somebody's new discovery or new innovative techniques. It's the same. And 4 million years ago, Prahlad Maharaj became perfect by practicing the nine limbs of devotion. And 400 years ago, Rupa Goswami became perfect by practicing the nine limbs of devotion. Right? 4 million years ago, Prahlad Maharaj spoke the verse, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Of course, his perfection was in Smaranam. But he was also engaged in Kirtan, but he specialized in Smaranam. So, that was what was good 4 million years ago. Was also good 400 years ago for Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami preached the same principles, and he lived the same principles. So we don't need any kind of new yoga or new process. This is bhakti yoga. This is sadhana bhakti, vaidhi sadhana bhakti. It is perfect, it's complete, it's full, there's nothing missing, nothing needs to be added, nothing needs to be subtracted. Simply we have to add our surrender and follow these great saints who have followed the saints of the past, evam parampara praptam imam rajasya ivadu. By following the parampara, we will come to the proper destination. Sure and steady, safe and sound. Tomorrow we'll start with the next verse. Is there any questions? Service to Guru must have faith in the identity of the Guru and the attainment of the Guru and realization of the Guru. But nowadays we see disciples, they can't have this type of faith in their Guru, so they become somewhat lax in their service. They may be somewhat negligent in their attitude or posture towards the Guru. So that's the question. Why is that? Is that the question? Or?
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's two things going working here. On one side we have the guru, on the other side we have the disciple. So gurus, of course, are on different levels. There's different levels of guru, as we mentioned, there's hierarchy everywhere. There's different levels of pure devotees, there's different levels of Mahabhagavats, there's different levels of gopis, or there's not just one gopi. There's five general categories of gopis and so many subcategories. They're all called Nayaka. Heroines, and in Nujjala Nilamani says there's 360 different levels of heroines. So talk about hierarchy, that's a lot of hierarchy. There's 360 different types of gopis. So obviously it's not all one. Guru is not one. One in the sense of representing Krishna, but how much they're representing Krishna, and what form of Krishna they're representing, and what ras they're representing in Krishna, and what dham of Krishna they're representing. There's so much hierarchy, so much differentiation. So the position of the guru, depending on how high the guru is, his position, that may determine a lot of the viewpoint of the disciple, how much the disciple can receive from that guru and how much he can appreciate what he's receiving. And in that appreciation and gratitude, he will react and act accordingly towards the Guru with special faith. We see that Prabhupada, he was on the highest level of pure devotion. So his disciples, they would really surrender a lot and really were dedicated, especially during his presence, because they felt so much indebtedness and they felt that they were receiving so much. So much teaching, so much mercy, so much love, so much guidance. So much Krishna was coming from Prabhupada to them. That was tangible, that was perceivable, that was individual. And responding to that, the disciples surrendered and really worked hard and really had a lot of faith and it never really waned. Even you meet sometimes many of Prabhupada's followers, after Prabhupada left, they also had difficulty and they went into Maya, or they became somewhat negligent in their practice of devotion. And maybe even really in Maya, breaking so many principles and not engaging in much. The only devotion they're doing is wearing neck beads, if they're even doing that. But then when you meet them and ask them, well, what do you think about Prabhupada? And they'll always speak nicely about Prabhupada. They'll say, well, I'm very fallen. I feel very shameful. I'm very embarrassed about my prison predicament. But it's out of my hand. My desires are too great. But my guru, he is great. And Srila Prabhupada is so merciful and wonderful. And I hope someday he'll forgive me and I'll get free from this Maya, and I'll be again reinstated in his divine eternal service. So such a high caliber personality like Srila Prabhupada, he is flawless in his position. So when one has a high guru like that, then it's easier to have faith and it's easier to be dedicated and to surrender. So that's one point. Depending on the level of the guru, that's how much the faith can be elicited from the heart of the disciple, and dedication, surrender, it has a lot to do with it. The influence, the power, the influence, the purity, the love, the effect, the extent of gurutva, the guru-ness in the personality, That's one side. On the other side, you have the disciple. The jivas are all at all different levels of faith. There's Shastriya Shraddha and Shuddha Shraddha and Shraddha Bhas, and many, many categories. There are many different types of faith amongst the conditioned souls. And faith, of course, is relative to our purity. The greater the purity, the more the faith. Nishta, we say Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava. These are different levels of faith. The faith of one at Ruchi is greater than the faith of one at Nishta. The faith of a devotee in the level of Nishta is greater. His faith is greater than the one on the level of Anartha Nivritti. So that the greater the faith, the greater the surrender. The greater the faith, the greater the service. The greater the faith, the more clear the vision of Guru. So the disciple as Komala Shraddha has very weak or pliable faith, the Kanishta Adhikari disciple, he will not be very faithful to the Guru. He will not be very dedicated to the Guru. He will not have much stickability with the Guru. But the Uttam Adhikari disciple, his faith is of a different nature. He has the greatest qualification. Uttam Adhikari means he has the highest qualification, the highest eligibility to see more clearly the identity and position of the spiritual master, and he also has the ability to respond accordingly by dedicated, dutiful, and continuous service to that spiritual master. So this relationship, it depends on the guru and depends on the disciple. The level and category of disciple and level and category of the guru, how much they will interact and how much faith that disciple will have and how much service he will render and how much he will be appointed or disappointed and how much he'll be satisfied or dissatisfied. Many times you have a very illustrious, wonderful, fantastic, unquestionably topmost guru, but the disciple is very undeveloped in his consciousness. Although he's initiated, he's at the lowest level of Kanishta. So therefore, he easily falls away, easily becomes influenced by contrary philosophies or irreligious ideas, and very soon gives up that guru, or becomes what you said, disappointed, or lackadaisical, or non-committant. So it's not the fault of the guru. It's certainly not the guru's fault, because we've already said this particular guru is in the topmost position. But the disciple is not very evolved. That is his lack of adhikar, his lack of qualification. So the onus of proof is on the disciple in that case. Sometimes the disciple is very sincere and very advanced and very dedicated, and the guru is not very advanced. But by chance they come together. And then the disciple starts to advance to the level of the guru, or even beyond the level of the guru. Prabhupada's telling. And then he feels lack of inspiration from that guru. Then that guru may act in such a way, no, you can't go further, you can't go beyond me. The guru may become envious of the disciple and try to repress him, or contain him, or constrain him by not allowing him to take higher association and not uplifting him to a higher shiksha guru for further teachings. So then that disciple will become disappointed, because he's a very sincere and good and advanced soul, but his guru is not much. He's not recognizing that, not realizing that, and not giving facility for him to grow more because of his own envy. Of course, that's a very neophyte guru, obviously, who is subjected to such lower tendencies. But that's also possible. It's a complicated matter. I just tried to shed a few ideas about it. It's not an easy answer.